Hello, everyone. We've been going through the book of Job. Today we'll begin in chapter 38. I hope you'll get your Bible and follow along. I think these last chapters of the book of Job are some of the most important chapters in the entire Bible. They have to do with God Himself speaking to Job. And so we have a lot of insight in these chapters about God and His thinking and His creation and what He says about His creation. And what he says about Job and how it leads to Job's repentance. There's just so many wonderful things here in these last chapters of the book of Job. So I hope you'll follow along and we can all study this together and learn from it because it's very, very instructive and very inspiring. These are not words spoken by somebody else or God speaking through one of his servants. These are words that God himself said, the God of the Old Testament, Jesus Christ, the one who later became Jesus Christ. So let's begin now in Job chapter 38 and verse 1. We know that Job's three friends said what they wanted to say over and over again, really very tough on Job and not correctly speaking about God. And then a young man named Elihu talked to Job and correctly pointed out Job's problems and correctly spoke about God. And now we come down to God himself now speaking to Job as he is sitting and lying there in his horrible physical condition of pain and suffering and disease and open running sores and agony and wondering what in the world is this all about? Why is this happening? When is it all going to go away? Why am I being treated this way? I've been so good. I've been so great. I've been so righteous. I don't deserve this and that kind of thing. And now Job is going to at last see the problem and do something about it. So let's begin now in chapter 38 and verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Who is this blathering on like this? Referring to Job, of course. What are you talking about, Job? Who do you think you are anyway? Gird up now your loins. Prepare yourself like a man. Get ready, because I'm going to teach you something, and it's going to be tough, and you're going to have to take it like a man and respond to it like a Christian man. Gird up now your loins like a man, for I will demand of you an answer thou me. I'm going to question you, Job, and I want you to answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare, if you have understanding, how in the world did I ever come around to being able to create the earth without you, Job? You and your magnificence, your engineering ability, your great creativity, your great talent and ability, how could I possibly have laid the foundations of the earth without you? But I did, because I did it a long time before you ever came along. So how in the world did I ever do it without you, Job? You ever thought about that, Job? Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if you have understanding. Who has laid the measures thereof, if you know, or who has stretched the line upon it? Who determined the measurements? Who had the measuring line? Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened, or who laid the cornerstone thereof, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? You know, when God created the universe all at the same time, the angels were there with him. He first created the angels, and then they were there, and when they saw it just kind of roll out in every direction, it was so stunning and so overwhelming and so glorious and powerful, they couldn't help but just shout for joy. And that's what it's talking about here when it talks about the stars and the sons of God. In symbolic language, the Bible clearly shows, you have to get it in context, but the Bible clearly shows that stars symbolically can represent angels and sons can literally represent angels because God created them. So he's talking about angels here in verse 7. When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Or who shut up the sea with doors when it broke forth as if it had issued out of the womb? You know, the sea comes rolling in, but it can only go so far and then it stops. Where'd the sea come from? Who made the sea, Job? Did you create the sea, the oceans? Where were you when I made them? Did I need your help in doing this? Or shut up the sea with doors when it break forth as if it had issued out of the womb, when I made the cloud the garment thereof, and thick darkness a swaddling band for it, and break up for it my decreed place, and set bars and doors. In other words, I fixed the limit as far as the ocean boundaries, the tidal waves, the beaches. and the earth is not covered with the ocean, because I set a limit as to how big the oceans will be and how far they'll roll in and then roll back out. I did that. Who did that? Did you do that, Job? No, I did that. Verse 9 says, when I made the cloud, so he's talking about what he did. Verse 10, and break up for it my decreed place. I fixed the limit for it and set bars and doors and said, hitherto shall you come, but no further. And here shall your proud waves be stayed or stop. Who decided how big the oceans would be? Who decided how far they can roll in on land and roll back out? God did, not Job. Have you commanded the morning since your days and caused the dayspring to know his place? The dawn to come forth, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked might be shaken out of it? That dark is pushed back by light when the dawn approaches? Who designed that, Job? Who made it that way? It is turned as clay to the seal, and they stand as a garment. It takes on form like clay under a seal and stands out. That's what the creation does. That's what the dawn and the day does. It just comes into form and shape, and all of a sudden we have daylight and we have a day. And the dark is gone. And from the wicked their light is withholden, and the high arm shall be broken. Who set it up to where the wicked will get into trouble and will pay the price for their wickedness? Who put that law into motion? Have you entered into the springs of the sea, or have you walked in the search of the depth? Have the gates of death been opened unto you, or have you seen the doors of the shadow of death? Do you know all of these things? I know all these things. Do you? Have you perceived the breadth of the earth? Declare if you know it all. Can you tell me how much the earth weighs? Can you tell me how really big it is, Job? I can tell you right down to the last centimeter and the last ounce. Can you? You're so righteous. You're so talented. You're so powerful. You're so amazing. You can do so many things. How in the world could I possibly get along without you, Job? Now, God is not being mean. He is not being harsh. But he is being strong, because he is now going to bring Job down to his proper size. And he's going to bring him to repentance. So he's getting right on top of the situation with Job. He's boring right in. He's helping Job think about the important things. He's helping him see himself for what he is, and he's helping him see God for what he is, and to draw the contrast which will lead to repentance. And to do that, it takes some very stern and strong correction, and that's what God is giving Job. He's reasoning with him. He's asking questions and wants Job to answer. And Job can't answer these questions because God is saying, who's really great, me or you? Who's really done all these things, me or you? Did I have to have your help to do them, Job? Verse 18, have you perceived the breadth of the earth? Declare if you know it all. You think you know everything, Job? Go ahead and answer that question if you know it all. Where is the way where light dwells? And as for darkness, where is the place thereof? Where does it come from? Where does it go? That you should take it to the bound thereof, and that you should know the path to the house thereof. Knowest thou it, because you were then born, or because the number of your days is great? How far back do you go, Job? How many years have you lived? How can you come to the point to where you know everything, or seem to think you know everything? Have you entered into the treasures of the snow, or have you seen the treasures of the hail, which I have reserved against the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war? By what way is the light parted? How is it divided? What causes the light and darkness to divide from each other? By what way is the light parted, which scatters the east wind upon the earth? Who has divided a watercourse for the overflowing of waters, or a way for the lightning of thunder? And there is a way that the lightning shoots out, and then thunder follows. Why does that happen? What causes that to happen? What sends the lightning in various directions? Follows it with thunder. Who created that? Who designed that, Job? Who has divided a watercourse for the overflowing of waters, or a way for the lightning of thunder, to cause it to rain on the earth where no man is, on the wilderness, wherein there is no man? It can rain where people are, it can rain where nobody is. Verse 27, to satisfy the desolate and waste ground, and to cause the bud of the tender herb to spring forth. Has the rain a father? Or who has begotten the drops of dew? Out of whose womb came the ice and the hoary frost of heaven? Who has gendered it? Who gives it birth? Where'd all this come from? How's all this happening? What makes all this tick? Is it you, Job? Or is it me? And if it's me, how did I do it without you? The waters are hid as with a stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. Can you bind the sweet influences of Pleiades, or loose the bands of Orion? Talking about the various clusters of stars that you see when you look up into the skies. Pleiades meaning the seven stars. The bands or belt of Orion. And you look up there and you see the Little Dipper, the Big Dipper, the seven stars. Where'd that all come from? How does it all hang together, Job? Verse 32, can you bring forth Maseroth in his season, constellations, or can you guide Arcturus with his sons, the great bear? You can see all these shapes in a clear, beautiful night sky if you know where to look. And Job knew that, and God knew that, and God is telling him, where'd that all come from? Who put it up there like that? Where were you when I did that, Job? Knowest thou the ordinances of heaven? Can you set the dominion thereof in the earth? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds that abundance of waters may cover you? Can you go out there and say to the clouds, I need rain, so send rain and it happens? No, you can't, but I can. Can you send lightnings that they may go and say unto you, here we are? Who has put wisdom in the inward parts or in the mind? Or who has given understanding to the heart? Why is it that mankind can speak, can talk, can think, can create, can have wisdom, can have knowledge? Where'd that come from? Did you give human beings that, Job? If not, then who did? And where were you when I did it? Because I'm the one who did it. Who can number the clouds in wisdom? Or who can stay the bottles of heaven? Or the rain that pours out? Who can say rain and who can say stop raining? Verse 38, when the dust grows into hardness and the clods cleave fast together, when the soil hardens into clumps and clings together, needs rain, so it'll soften up and can be planted. Who can do that, Job? Can you do that? Will you hunt the prey for the lion or fill the appetite of the young lions? When they couch in their dens and abide in the covert to lie in wait, who provides for the raven his food when his young ones cry unto God? They wander for lack of meat. And who takes care of them? Who created the animal kingdom and equipped it with the ability to find food and to give it to their young ones and to reproduce and all of these wonderful things that happen in creation, be it in the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, the human family, or in the universe, or in the waters on the earth? How did all this come to pass and all of it in such an orderly fashion carries on doing exactly what it was designed and created to do? How did that all happen, Job? Who did all of that? Who made all of that? Who sustains all of that? Think about it. Who does? If you really think about it, it's not you. Well, if not you, then who? Well, it's me. So who is really great? And who is really righteous? Well, it's not you, Job, but I am. God is teaching him that lesson. Now, chapter 39, verse 1. Knowest thou the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth, the mountain goats bear young? Or can you mark when the hinds do calf, when the deer give birth? Can you number the months that they fulfill, or do you know the time when they bring forth? God knows exactly when every birth in the animal kingdom and human family is going to take place or does take place. He's asking Job, do you know? They bow themselves, they bring forth their young ones. They cast out their sorrows or their pangs of birth. Their young ones are in good liking or in good health. They grow up with corn. They go forth and return not unto them. Then they go on and raise their families. That's the way the animal kingdom works. Who made it that way? Who has sent out the wild donkey free, or who has loosed the bands of the wild donkeys, whose house I have made the wilderness, and the barren land his dwellings? He scorns the multitude of the city, neither regards he the crying of the driver. He's wild, he's free, he goes where he wants, when he wants. Who made him that way? Who created him? Who set all that in motion, Job? The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searches after every green thing. Will the unicorn be willing to serve you or abide by your crib? The wild ox? How are you going to get him to serve you, the wild ox? Verse 10, can you bind the unicorn with his band and the furrow? Or will he harrow the valleys after you? Will you trust him because his strength is great, or will you leave your labor to him? Will you believe him that he will bring home your seed or your grain and gather it into your barn? This wild ox, this mighty creature, you're going to let him pull your plows and handle your grain and take care of your produce and store it in the barn? Who created that unicorn? And who made it wild? And then how can you tame an ox and get it to work for you? Were you the designer of all these animals, and were you the designer of what they're like and their natures and what they will do and won't do and can do and can't do? Can you answer these questions, Job? You see what God is doing. He's trying to help Job see his problem. Verse 13, did you give the goodly wings unto the peacocks, or wings and feathers unto the ostrich? Where'd they get all these things? And you know, when he's talking about an oxen, there are oxen, of course, that can be beasts of burden. But here he's talking about wild animals and wild oxen that go their own way. And you might be able to tame them and you might not be. But generally speaking, you don't tame them. They go their own way, and they're up on the mountains and they're down in the valleys and they do what they want, like buffalo do. And who made it that way? They have a purpose to fulfill. And Job, who gave them that purpose? And who designed them the way they are? He's trying to contrast situations and circumstances and raise questions to make Job think, so Job can begin to see through the fog of his vanity the truth about himself and about God. Verse 13, gavest thou the goodly wings unto the peacocks, or wings and feathers unto the ostrich, which leaves her eggs in the earth and warms them in the dust and forgets that the foot may crush them or that the wild beast may break them? But she keeps on putting them there, even though sometimes they get broken like that. She is hardened against her young ones as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without fear. Sometimes animals do turn on their young ones, and the young ones have to escape and establish a life and an existence of their own. And that is the way it is in the animal kingdom in certain circumstances. The male and female will take care of their young ones, and then the young ones have to go and take care of themselves. But sometimes the male and female, or one, will turn on their young ones and neglect them or even injure them. And the young ones have to try to survive on their own. And it ends up being the survival of the fittest in certain circumstances in the animal kingdom and in the plant kingdom. Well, who made it all that way to keep things in proper balance? Verse 17, because God has deprived her of wisdom, neither has he imparted to her understanding. So she does some stupid things sometimes, some irrational things, some things that she shouldn't do. And other times she doesn't do that. She doesn't have mind power. She doesn't have wisdom. She doesn't have understanding. She just has instinct. And sometimes that instinct will cause different animals to do different things at some times and other things at other times. Why is it that way, Job? Who created, quote unquote, the balance in nature? Verse 18, what time she lifted up herself on high, she scorns the horse and his rider. And I'll tell you, if you've ever seen an ostrich, and I have in Africa, and they can run, and they can run very, very fast, and they can kick powerfully. And sometimes they're strong enough, people even ride them as they're running. Who made them that way? Verse 19, have you given the horse strength? Have you clothed his neck with thunder? Some translations say with a mane. And horses are magnificent animals. The power and the strength and the speed they have. How did that happen? And God is asking Job that. And really, when you read these chapters in Job, it completely blows out of the water any notion of evolution and clearly establishes the fact that God created all these things. He designed them all perfectly. They fit in perfectly with his plan for creation. And he's rehearsing that to Job and doing it in such great detail that Job is beginning to see how great God is and how puny he is. And that's the point that God's making. Have you given the horse strength? Have you clothed his neck with thunder? Can you make him afraid as a grasshopper? the glory of his nostrils will tremble. He's got tremendous majesty. He's got tremendous speed. He's got tremendous quickness. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He goes on to meet the armed men, war horses, that will charge right into the thick of battle and not worry about the sword, the spear, or even guns and bullets. They go right on in with their strength and speed and take their rider right into the middle of the battle. It's just incredible how they come to where they can do that and will do that. He goes on to meet the armed men. He mocks at fear and is not affrighted. Neither turns he back from the sword. He goes toward the battle. The quiver rattles against him, the glittering spear and the shield or the javelin. He swallows the ground with fierceness and rage. He just devours the distance. And it is amazing to see a horse in a dead run where he's extended out and his head and tail are level and he's moving across the ground. It's a magnificent, majestic thing, up to 40 miles an hour or more. And to ride on a horse when he's doing that is breathtaking. What a creature. What a fantastic, wonderful animal horses are. He swallows the ground with fierceness and rage. Neither believes he that it is the sound of the trumpet, or he doesn't back off because of that. He just carries right on, and he stands firm. Even though the trumpet has been blown and the warning of war and the armies charging, he simply stands firm when the trumpet has sounded. It's like he doesn't even believe it sounded. Neither believes he that it is the sound of the trumpet. He says among the trumpets, "Ha, ha, so what?" He laughs at it. And he smells the battle afar off, the thunder of the captains and the shouting. And yet he stays right there, this war horse, this magnificent animal of speed and strength and courage and might. Where'd he come from, Job? Who made him? Who designed him? Does the hawk fly by your wisdom and stretch your wings toward the south? Is that how a hawk flies? Is it because of you, Job? Is it as a result of your great engineering might and feet? Does the eagle mount up at your command and make her nest on high? Just notice the fantastic descriptions of creation here. God is the one who made all these things, and he knows all about them in minute detail. And it's just magnificent to hear him describe his creation in such vivid detail. He knows way more about it than any scientific expedition or any scientific expert writing a book about it can possibly know. We're getting it straight from the one who created it all. And that's just exactly the way it is. Eagles do mount up and make their nest on high. Verse 28, she dwells and abides on the rock, upon the crag of the rock and the strong place. From there or thence she seeks the prey, and her eyes behold afar off. She can see so far. That's why the term eagle eye has come into our language. So-and-so is an eagle eye. That means they can see a long way off. They can spot things quickly. Well, eagles have incredible eyesight. They can see at such great distances and in minute detail and pinpoint prey for food or danger from hostile situations and not fly right into them. We have to have binoculars and we have to have long-range viewing technology to see all of this. The eagle doesn't have those spy glasses, so to speak, and those binoculars and those telescopes. She just has her eyes, but they can see, nevertheless, at great distances and through all kinds of circumstances, cut right through it and see small things, prey, fish swimming along in a river, a deer bounding up through a valley, a hen or a chicken or a bird jumping around on the ground picking up food. And that eagle can be flying hundreds of feet overhead and spot that and quietly go into a dive and just fall like a rock. And just before they get to their prey, spread their wings out and reach down with their great giant talons and pick the prey up, be it a rabbit or squirrel, and fly off with it and up to the top of the rock where she's made her nest and feed her young ones. Did you do all that, Job? How'd that all happen? Who made it that way? That's what God is saying here. From thence she seeks the prey, verse 29, and her eyes behold afar off. Her young ones also suck up blood, and where the slain are, there is she. That's the way it is with buzzards. That's the way it is with bald eagles. That's the way it is with birds of prey. They can do all this because they're equipped to do it, because God made it so. But you didn't, Job. That brings us to the end of chapter 39. Until next time, this is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.